On today's programme, I'm speaking to Susie Grant, also known as Alternative Ageing. She's in her 70s and has over 100,000 followers on social media and is one of my inspirations for ageing well. We discussed how the death of her mother in her early 60s was a big wake-up call for Susie, who then went on to write several nutritional books. We also spoke about how she strongly believes that women can do anything that they set their minds to, which I'm a great advocate of too. But before we get started, can I ask that you give us a follow on your podcast app or Instagram? Now let's get started with the podcast. Welcome to Retirement Rebel Life After 60. I'm your host, Siobhan Daniels. Join me on a journey to meet inspiring rebels who've redefined retirement. Together, we'll explore new passions, triumphs over challenges, and discover the vibrant possibilities of life after 60. This is about living boldly, not just aging. So are you ready to rebel? Last week, I spoke to Sarah Thornley, who's in her 60s. She's not only competed in a national paddleboarding competition, but went on to become a UK champion paddleboarder. We discussed how important it is to pursue your dreams, even after bringing up your children. If you haven't already listened to it, I urge you to give it a listen. Welcome, Susie, author, broadcaster and content creator, and my inspiration.
Oh, no. Hello, Siobhan. Lovely to see you, but you're my inspiration from those days when I met you, when we were in between lockdowns and I came to visit Dora the Explorer and we sort of travelled round near where I live, Rottingdean. Oh, it was so good to meet you. I'm so inspired by you and all your fellow guests, so much so that for those who don't know me, I wrote to Siobhan this morning and said, I feel like an imposter. I'm not doing anything brave.
No, you are certainly not an imposter. I mean, like you say, we've only met a couple of times, but I have to say, both times that I've come away from those meetings, I've been so excited about the opportunities in life and everything. And I think it's your no-nonsense approach to life. Is that something you've always been like, or something that's become stronger as you've got older?
It's definitely become stronger as I've got older. But you and I share the same history in as much as we were both working in radio and television. So you have to grow a thick skin in that industry. And I know that privately we've compared notes. But, you know, if an editor really annoyed me and was, and this is the 80s, going into the 90s, but if a news editor really annoyed me and was much shorter than me, I remember actually standing up and going, why are you talking to me like that? How dare you talk to me like that? And actually, I've got my wires crossed and he wasn't being rude at all. So I think I have always been like that, which is why nobody messed with me. I've been very fortunate in life. Nobody's ever messed with me. I don't think they would dare.
It's your spiritedness. You're such a spirited woman, though. And I absolutely love that. And it sounds like you've always been like that.
I think I have. I think I was probably described on school reports as a highly spirited child. I think I probably have. But don't forget, both my mother and father were trained journalists. So I've sort of got that no-nonsense approach in my genes, I think. Mm. You know, plus the madness that runs through our family, you know, the eccentricity, I should say, not madness.
So what kind of journalism did your parents work in? And did you always know that you'd end up in journalism?
No, I didn't. I went into the ghastly world of advertising first. It appealed to me. Well, BBC was my very, very first job. And I often show, that's why I love a particular hotel in London, the Langham, because it literally, we used to drink in the bar there this is in the 70s.
Oh, a lot of drinking went side by side with journalism in those days, didn't it?
Oh, didn't it ever? Oh my God, right up to the late 80s, we were spending all day in bars and restaurants. And then I went into advertising. I've no idea why, but I did the same sort of thing there. I got into production. I produced videos and they were really new in the late 70s, early 80s. I did corporate videos. I did live events. So basically what I do now linked very well with what I did then. My parents, as far as their journal, they were prop. My dad was a proper journalist. He joined the Evening News when he was 14 years old, Siobhan.
Goodness me.
people went to work very early in those days. So, and he was a foreign correspondent. He was sent all over the place. He was much better journalist than me, writing-wise. Proper hard news. Yeah. I never liked hard news. I liked features. I've always loved features. And that's why I love what I do now. It's features. It's soft. It's entertaining. It's informative, but not dry. But Dad was a proper journalist. And he met my mum, who was Bulgarian and was at the Prague University where he was working. And she was studying journalism. And they fell in love. And he brought her back to England, and I popped out a year later. So she never actually got on with her career in journalism.
That was often the case with women in those days, wasn't it?
Very sad, isn't it? I don't think she ever forgave him for that.
Really? but I think that's why an awful lot of women who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond now want to repurpose their lives because they gave up a dream many years before. Because they were in love, because they wanted to bring up the children, but they gave up that dream. And now, because we're living longer, they've got that space, haven't they, to revisit often that dream and to surpass their dreams.
I agree. I mean, I think, yeah, it's definitely older than me because everybody worked when I was at working age. Everybody did. Nobody became a housewife like they did in the 50s. So, to my neighbour's 92... And she would have brought up her children in the 50s. And she was a school teacher all her life. She's still got all her marbles. She's incredibly bright. I think a lot of it, well, she wasn't the majority, admittedly. She was very much the minority. But I think if you're a strong woman and have the right kind of husband, they probably did have careers, but we didn't hear about it a lot. Does that make sense to you? What about your mum?
No, and I think my mum ran an old people's home. I was one of eight children, so there were eight children, mum and dad.
Hey.
Yeah, and 10 old people all lived in this massive house. So we all had our jobs to do. We all had to muck in.
Wow, no wonder you're like you are. You see, I was an only child till my brother arrived 9 years later.
And how did you feel about that when he came on the scene?
Oh, I think I was quite resentful, yes, because he got so much attention. And to this day, got far more attention than I ever did. But I got used to, you see, this is the big difference between us. I got used to being that's why I'm very happy doing things on my own, I think. I don't think I need a shrink to tell me that it was because I spent 9 years on my own. I would listen to records, I'd play in the garden, I'd play with my mum. There were very few friends living near me, and I actually asked to go to boarding school when I was 14.
Really?
I missed every... Yeah, I mean, how are you? Because I'm gregarious, and I like people, and I wasn't seeing enough people.
What was boarding school like?
I loved it, but I was 14, and I've got literally... There were four of us, and it was a convent, but you know the story about convent girls. We're all a bit wild.
Do you know what? I've spoken to a few on this podcast and I think we are all a bit wild.
Oh, you went to a convent too?
I did. I went to a very strict Catholic grammar school. Yeah, all nuns.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Well, I was shared a dormitory. There were only four of us because we were quite grown up. And they are still very close friends. I mean, one of them is on my YouTube all the time. And the other one lives in Bali. But we're still really, really, really good friends all these years later, growing old disgracefully together. But I loved it because I wanted it. I asked for it. But it was so much more fun than being at home. And also another thing that I hated, and so did my father. He hated commuting. Couldn't stand that, standing in the freezing winter waiting for a bus.
Oh, gosh,
you know,
yeah.
Up to your knees. Oh, do you remember that?
I do.
So much colder than it is now. It was much colder, wasn't it?
I know. I tell my daughter that. I said, and we used to have just sort of like a gabardine and wellies and bare legs and standing waiting for the bus.
It was freezing. always had cold hands and feet. So I think that could have been another reason why I said, please, can I go to boarding school?
So going back to your career in journalism, do you remember, was it difficult for you to get your first job as a woman, or has it never impacted you being a woman in the workforce? Because a lot of women have come up against sexism.
Yes, no. Well, I'll tell you the type of sexism. It didn't upset me. It was just a way of life in the 80s. But I, after advertising, I had a passion for radio. I still have a passion for radio. That's why I listen to podcasts constantly. I don't read books. I do Audible. I grew up listening to a radio. So my first career, I was lucky enough to get onto a course in Soho for radio journalists, basically, and I had the right background. And he said at the end of the course, there were about 30 of us, that he thought I was the one least likely to succeed because I was from advertising. He said it nicely, but I was the only one who succeeded.
That's fire in your belly talk for me.
Yes, exactly. I got a job at Capital Radio as a freelance very quickly. I think I was living off money borrowed against my mortgage because I certainly wasn't earning. Mm. As you don't, but I did it for the experience and I made features. And then eventually I joined full time. I did the breakfast show with Graham Dean, for those old enough to remember him. For a year, I was the news and weather girl. Best job ever. I still, if anyone says, what was your best job ever? That was it, even though I had to get up at 4:30. And then I was lucky enough to get shifts at TVAM. And moved into the not-so-glamorous world of television. I wish I'd stayed in radio.
Do you know what? I said that. I did 10 years in radio, and I just thought it was part of the career progression to go to telly. But I wished I'd known then what I know now, and I would never have gone to telly because, like you, I love the medium of radio and podcasts and listening to things.
It's just the best. Just the best, but it didn't pay the mortgage.
No.
And do you remember Jilly Cooper? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh, I do.
Of course you know Jilly Cooper. Well, she was the first celebrity I ever interviewed, and I was at Capital. And she actually said, darling, don't go into television. It's full of fake people. Stay in radio. It's much more real. And I wish I'd listened to her. But, you know, you don't listen to anyone when you're 30, do you?
I know. Well, it sounds like you were having an amazing time when you were 30. What were your thoughts then about when you're 60 and beyond? Did you think it was a case of slowing down? Was it something to be fearful of? Because all the images being portrayed fill your thoughts.
No, I don't think it ever. It did. I remember thinking the woman I worked with when I was 21 was extremely old, and she was probably only 30. You know, she had the dog and a flat. But I didn't feel like that at 30, probably because I was mixing with more people.
Mm.
I interviewed much older, like Jilly Cooper. I mean, what a wonderful example of aging. So I don't think, and we didn't have Instagram, I don't think I was that concerned about people's appearance and how they looked and how old they looked. The only time it hit me was when I was 42 and my mum died at 62. And
gosh,
she
that's young.
Was the healthiest person in the world. She brought me up, because she was Bulgarian, on the Bulgarian, which is Mediterranean diet. So I was brought up on things like roasted peppers. I was eating 30 veg a week there with my mum in the 50s. So I was brought up really well. She had to go to the chemist to get olive oil, which they only used then for ears. So
oh
she
my
was coming
goodness,
home
to with
little
with
tiny bottles. Yes, so that she could give her family olive oil because she knew how good it was. So when she died of a massive heart attack, it was my biggest wake-up call, far more of a wake-up call than working in TV. I was still on TV and, yes, very conscious of wrinkles because you've got cameras and you're looking at the camera all the time thinking, oh, God, I'm going to need a facelift. And that was when I was 42.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's why they all go and do it. It's very cruel, especially now with HD. But anyway, that was my wake-up call. Now, to be fair, and I make doctors take it off my records because they're just so desperate to put me in that category. Oh, you're, and I go, take it off. My mum was obese. She took no exercise and she was an alcoholic. Do not put me in the same category. Mm. So that's another place.
But you concentrated on nutrition after that, didn't you? Am I right in thinking you wrote some books on nutrition?
I did. So because of my mum dying, I obviously realised that my life could be much shorter than I was hoping for. So I read everything. I devoured books and did loads of research and made sure I was... I mean, I always had eaten a healthy diet, but I was absolutely... addicted to learning more and more, to such an extent that I went, television was coming to an end, you know, I don't have to tell you, I was getting ridiculously antisocial hours of news reading on Sky and driving all over the place just to do a program, and I just thought, oh, I don't really want to do this anymore for the rest of my life.
What age was that, if you don't mind me asking, that you were repurposing what you wanted to do?
I guess late 40s.
Right.
And I decided to train as a nutritionist, which I did around my 50th birthday. That was a huge milestone, my 50th, far more than 60 or 70.
Why was it so huge?
Hated it, middle-aged. It's so accepted now. You know, we've got all these podcasts and all these Instagrammers and YouTubers, all proud of being middle-aged. But don't forget, this was a long time ago. You know, I'm 70-something. I prefer to say well over 60.
oh, so I like that.
Yes. So if I'm not in the mood, I don't like labels. And there's something horrible about saying the word. My favourite DJ has just reached 50. He will not say that word. He will not say it. He said, I don't want a T-shirt with it on. I'm 30, as far as anyone. And I thought, good on you, because you immediately get put in a slot of being middle-aged, or in my case, old.
I hear that, though. I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, but one of the reasons that prompted me to do this podcast, Retirement Rebel Life After 60, was I got sick of not seeing 60 and just being lumped with sort of after 50. It was almost like they didn't bother. You were just like one big lump group of people that you were heading towards the slippery slope, slowing down and off you go. And it was like, no, I'm feisty, I'm loud, I'm living life, I'm out there, and you're going to blum in here from me and as many women as I can.
No, I totally agree with you. That's why I hated... No, totally agree with you. That's why I hated reaching 50, because then it was officially middle age, and after 50, you are invisible, you probably won't get a good job, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't wear shorts, you shouldn't do the other, and... Yeah, I hated it. I didn't want to be middle-aged. I'm much happier being old. Elderly.
But old is good, isn't it? And that's what we are showing. Old is good. I don't say I'm young. I say I'm old, I'm getting older. But old is a good thing. It's not something to be feared. What I love about your social media channel, though, all the content that you create, it's so colourful and vibrant and just positive. Do you see yourself as inspiring and giving women confidence?
Oh, yes. That's why I'm here. That's precisely what I want to leave on this planet, helping people. God, the comments I get on YouTube, Siobhan, and Instagram, but even more on YouTube, because that's a slightly older, more international audience. And, you know, I make them happy. If somebody says, you've made me smile today, I've done my just farting about in this room going, oh, look at this outfit. Look, I've put clashing
I love the way you
together.
Do all your scarves. I love the scarves and the different glasses.
Oh, the glasses, huge. But that's precisely what happened when I got to 50. I literally dreaded it with a vengeance. I walked two marathons. And the second one was in New York, but just before my 50th birthday. I then ran away to a spa in Thailand, which was gifted to me because I was still doing journalism. And I hid, and I didn't let anyone know in the spa it was my 50th birthday, just like this guy I listen to every morning. My friend, one of my oldest friends, sent me a fax. That's how long ago.
Goodness
saying,
me.
Happy 50th, so everybody knew. So I had to celebrate it. But I literally ran away, which I haven't done for any other birthday. But when I came back very soon after that, I was writing, I think I'd done one book and I had another book deal with Penguin. And I just sat and thought, why am I staying in London when I love the seaside and love living by the sea? Why on earth am I living here still, wearing black, navy blue or beige every single day? And I moved to Brighton, and that's when my whole life changed, because I wasn't on camera, so I could wear exactly what I liked. I mean, I was always colourful. Friends remind me, at TVAM, I had a full-length faux fur, which you never saw on camera, that was bright pink.
So, Oh, my goodness.
I know. I always was a bit mad, but going to Brighton, I was allowed to be mad because everybody is here. You see, you know, men in their 80s rollerblading down the beach. Men with, it's not just women, men with quirky hats on, men tap dancing in the street, and women with dyed hair. Everybody had bright orange hair when I moved, so I did as well. And very hippie, and you just basically can wear anything in this city.
And how did you feel about yourself when you allowed yourself to be as vibrant as you felt?
So happy. I was such a happy bunny. I did yoga every day. That's why I'm desperate to downsize. I want to go back to that area. I used to walk to yoga every day. I had friends. I don't know how. We didn't have, well, we had the internet, but we didn't have bloody mobile phones. We used to have time to go to yoga at least four times a week and then sit having coffee outside, looking at the sea, sitting in the sun. And then I would go back to work, and I managed to write a book, doing very little the rest of the day. So I don't know what's happened now, but I don't have enough hours in the day. I don't know about you.
I'm just going to interrupt for a moment to shamelessly plug my book, Retirement Rebel. It's published by Vertebrate Publishers, and it's my honest account of feeling broken in my 50s and finding my happy place in my mid-60s. I got rid of my home and possessions and hit the road in my motorhome for a roller coaster ride along life's adventures. I want it to help younger women not to fear aging and older women to grab life and run with it. You can purchase a copy in most bookstores and on Amazon. Right, now back to the conversation. You do a lot of travelling, don't you, on your own, a solo female travelling, which is something I am passionate about. I work with the Caravan and Motorhome Club to encourage women, particularly over 60, to go out in their vans and to travel on their own. What would you say to women who say, oh, I daren't go on my own?
Excellent. Well, first of all, I have to say, like the lady you interviewed last week, but she said she'll always ask a man. And I thought you did very well. You were like, no, you can do it yourself. And I was thinking, yes, right on, Siobhan, because I used to be one of those. Can't open the jar. I'll go and ask the neighbours. And then I learned to do things, which I'm shouting at you while I was listening, going, YouTube, you can do anything if you've got YouTube. I have learned how to cope with leaking taps and all sorts of things.
No, it's so true. I went to France recently on my own, and I'd never driven on the other side of the road in my motorhome. And I was showing at 64, you could do it. And then the night before, I was panicking about going round the roundabouts, and I got on YouTube and I was watching loads of YouTube things about how to go around the roundabouts in France. And it was fine when I got there, but I did consult YouTube.
Exactly. We can do anything. I draw the line at what you're doing only because I have bad eyes. They're getting worse. I'm actually, the optician sending me to the eye hospital, which is very depressing.
Oh, right.
But I had a detached retina in this eye. Now, this eye is wonderful, but the other eye is developing a cataract, which is good news because my sight will improve when they remove it. But also, I've got macular degeneration as got a little worse in this eye. So driving, I can't drive at night. Haven't been able to since the detached retina.
Right.
I gather lots of women are having this problem, and men now, because of the hugely bright headlights. And as for driving in France, that périphérique, you didn't do the périphérique.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't do that. I just went into Normandy.
Oh, I did that in my 30s and went round and round Paris crying for about 2 hours. So I cannot do what you're doing, but I could drive there in camp. I'm very happy. I've done loads of festivals camping. I'm very happy living, you know, roughish.
What, in your 60s, 50s, 60s, in your later life, have you been doing that? That's what I love.
I started going to festivals in my 50s. Started.
Yes.
I mean, I used to go to day festivals, obviously, while I was living in London, but I actually started camping in my 50s. I backpacked round Thailand on my own in my 50s. So, girls, whatever it is you want to do, the only thing stopping you is you. It's what's going on in your head.
I totally, totally agree, Susie. And when my daughter went off to uni, because I'd been a single mum since she was 4 and a half, I got a gap year from the BBC, packed my rucksack, and I went round the world on my own for a year. And
I've
thoroughly enjoyed
too.
It. Yeah. So we've got
too.
So many similarities. But what about safety and fear and being on your own? Because that's it. People blow it out of proportion, don't they?
I think the fear, I don't read newspapers, you know, certain newspapers. I don't watch the news. I do not, I'm sure you've got friends like this. I have friends who always concentrate on the negative and never the positive. I was talking about something the other day and my friend immediately said, oh, that's right, because I love Portugal and I keep going out to see my brother. And she said, oh, you know, they're having terrible problems with their hospitals, because she reads rubbish all the time online. Terrible problem. Make sure you don't end up in a hospital. And I went, well, first of all, I'm going to avoid going to hospital. Secondly, my brother went there and was treated amazingly well for 5 solid hours to make sure he hadn't had a stroke. So that's what annoys me.
Yes. There's always doom and gloomers in this world, aren't there? And people say to me about, you know, giving up my home and all my possessions and all that secure. What if? And I say, I'm not going to age with what if being the dominant factor in my life. I'm going to, what if? When it happens, I'll deal with it.
Oh, what if? We don't know how long we've got on this planet, Siobhan. That's why I want to make, and you are, the best of every moment of it. The only thing that's holding me back now is my dear dog. I can't go anywhere because he's 17 and dying, but not dying. He's, you know, still got a happy life. But if it wasn't for him being shut, he'll go back, but I can't go far. And I don't, you know, that phone call saying, I think he's reaching his end. I can't be the other side of the world.
No. Because you do go to Australia, don't you?
Yes, I used to go every winter. My favourite place was Byron Bay. And all my friends are there. I've got more friends there than I have in Brighton. And I used to go to gigs all the time. And, you know, again, that's a really scary place. You know, if you believe everyone, ooh, brown snake, you'll be dead in seconds if a brown snake gets you. Oh, don't go in the water. Oh, there are crocodiles in there, you know. You just have to use common sense. Obviously, if I was in Cape Town, I wouldn't go out at night on my own. But I have practically everywhere else.
It's common sense wherever you are, isn't it, about living and security. But also what I love is you're traveling solo, you're going to gigs, you're going to festivals, you're camping out, and you think of all these labels that they give to people when they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s or whatever. You wouldn't fit it. And you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
No, but Siobhan, the most hilarious thing is now, I'm not camping anymore. I'm a bit over that. But there's a wonderful festival in Portsmouth that I go to with my best mate, Dahlia, every single day, because fortunately for us, she's walking distance from the festival. So we can go and party for 2 or 3 days nonstop. And we've had some amazing times there. But the one thing I've noticed is some of the youngsters don't mean to be, but they're incredibly patronising. And they say, oh, look at you two. Well done, you. Wow. And it makes me really angry. And I just go, excuse me? We fucking invented sex, drugs and rock and roll. And I can't help it. It makes me so angry. How dare they act like, look at those pensioners dancing is probably what they're thinking. But do you
know what? I remember when I was in my 20s going to a nightclub and seeing some women who I knew were in their mid-40s and they had children at home, and being a bit of a monkey, well, a bitch really, with my friends going, oh, they should be at home. They've left their children. And look at me now.
Look at you now, exactly. Oh, just for anyone listening, just do what you've always wanted to do.
Well, that was going to be, what advice would you give to people who are aging now?
Yeah, well, I find something that you're passionate about. You have found something I have. The reason I started Instagramming and blogging and YouTubing was because I was bored. I'm not a retirement person, nor are you. I have to be creative and do something. And I actually went full circle, Siobhan. What I loved doing in my 20s was making audiovisual shows of my travels, my first trip to Australia. And I literally put slides and music together. That I did at home as a hobby. So that's a clue as to what you need to find your passion again. So when my godchildren, I said, I'm really bored and I've tried to write a film script. I can't do it. I've tried to write a novel. I can only do nonfiction, blah, 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 blah. And both of them separately, they haven't even met each other, said, why don't you become a blogger? And that was 10 years ago this September. And it's like, this is what gets me up in the morning. If I have nothing to do, I'm like, gosh, I've got nothing to do today. What's my going to do? So I create some content. I mean, you know, the climate stops us doing a lot of things we'd like to do. And a 17-year-old dog stops the big walks, although I can leave him at home now. So I think the biggest advice I can give anyone listening is, please find your passion, lose your fear, don't listen to the negative minis, whatever, what do we call them, negative ninnies, and do what is going to make you happy. Now, it might be getting on a plane, saving up for business class and going to the other side of the world to visit an old school friend that you really miss. It might be going to a festival, but if you're of a certain age, you might want to do glamping instead of putting up a tent, because that's really awful, especially if it rains.
Or take a motorhome.
Or take, even better, I would happily stay in a motorhome.
We've got to do an overnight, you and I, we've got to do somewhere, go somewhere for the night, park
well,
up.
I want to go to Scotland. Can we meet in Scotland one
yes,
day?
Yes, you fly up there. And then,
I love Scotland. I adore Glasgow. I went all around Scotland last year with a friend from Australia. I want to go back to Edinburgh. I am in love with Scotland. It is so... And I want to go cold water swimming. I'm too frightened. Now, that's one thing you can help me with.
Have you ever been to the Outer Hebrides?
No, I've only been as far as Isle of Skye.
Right, we should go. You should fly to Glasgow. Then we'll drive to Oban, get a ferry over, and we can go to Harris and Lewis, and it's beautiful. And we can do some beautiful cold water swimming, do our breathing, relax. I promise that. Right, that's a girl's road trip.
We'll have to wait till the dog is either got a sitter or he's gone. But I really mean it, Siobhan. I was going to ask you about cold water. I've got cold water out there in my pond, but somebody's frightened me. Somebody who came to decorate. Ages ago, because she got the aftershock thing.
Right.
It's like hypothermia, but it's called something else. And she was shaking from top to bottom. And ever since then, it's really scared me doing it on my own.
No, I do think it's sensible to build up to it. I built up to it by having lots of cold showers.
That's what I do
and
now.
I didn't do my first few cold swims on my own. I did them with other people. I'm very cautious where I do go. And if I'm any doubt, I don't go in. And I take all the safety precautions, but I also have a hot drink with me. I've got a fabulous dry robe.
Exactly.
But more often than not, I'm with people, because all around the country, there are wonderful groups of women that you can just contact wherever you go. And they welcome you with open arms. Now, this podcast is called Retirement Rebel. And I'm asking all my guests one question, and that is, when was the last time that you felt like you were a rebel or felt rebellious?
I'm always rebellious, Siobhan. I'm a rule
I know, that's
breaker.
Why I love you.
If somebody tells me not to do something, I'll do the opposite. I did write in to, do you know Jane Garvey and Fee Glover?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yes, I love their podcast. I did write into them. I haven't it on Instagram because Jane is very cynical but she's just very cynical.
Yeah.
And she actually said, I'm going to upset a lot of people now, but she actually said the other day, is it just me, but I'm so sick of hearing about the menopause. Every time I turn the radio on, every time I pick up a paper, has it gone too far? And I did write in and say, I'm with you. I'm so sick of it. And then the next person she interviewed was Davina McCall.
No.
She said to her far more politely, do you think we've had enough of it now? And Davina had completely the opposite.
Yeah, I think that is rebellious. That is definitely rebellious. But for me, I'm doing this podcast as well because I want to prove, okay, people can suffer in the menopause. It can be a hideous time, not for everybody, but it can for some.
Go and see an expert in that case. Please go and see an expert.
Yes, but post-menopause can be the best time of your life. So let's move on. Let's think of this decade and beyond. And it can just be the start of something new because I don't know what happened to me the other side of the menopause. You kind of feel so much stronger. You're more opinionated. I was just ready to take on life even more.
I completely agree with you. We were maybe luckier that we didn't suffer. But had I been suffering, I would have gone to see someone. You know, Davina McCall and co are doing a magnificent job because they're banging the drum for people like Dr. Louise Newson.
Yeah, they're getting the conversation going.
The experts that we now have, like Louise Newson, has trained 200 GPs.
Yeah.
In the menopause and HRT, yes, okay, you have to be really careful, but there are more benefits than side effects or dangers. And so, you know, that's why I'm glad they're banging the drum, because nobody should suffer. If all the members of parliament, all the men in this country had those sort of things to suffer from, oh my God, there would be medicine free on tap. I actually asked my, this is rebellious. I actually asked my doctor who was on the phone just to do another prescription so I can get it free. And I said to her, this particular person who's an expert now has trained 200 GPs. I'm just really sad that there isn't one in my local surgery. Would it not interest you? And she went, no, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the whole... She actually said, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to become an expert in the menopause. So how sad is that? So I'm a rebel in that respect.
Well, you're a rebel. You're my inspiration. And you've been an absolute joy to talk to on the podcast. Thank you so much
you're
for coming on.
You're my inspiration. Just shut up. I can't wait to meet you in Scotland. You're going to make me a braver woman. Because something happens. Something happens, girls. Sorry to end on a sad note. But psychologically, there's a big difference between 60-something and 70-something. I think it's because of all the media. That's why I think I'm going to stop talking about my age, because it started in COVID. If you're over 70, you're vulnerable. If you're over 70, you should have a flu jab every year. If you're, you know, you said it yourself, it's now over 65, it's over 60. How far are they going to go? You should be on statins, blah, blah, blah. And I think we need to take, I have always been like this all my life. Take charge of your body. It is your body, not theirs. Your body. If you're not happy, then go and see an expert. And that's all I can say. Just don't buy into this. I'm old, which, you know, is very common. Even I do it. I go, I'm so old now.
I just say I'm old, but I say it with an upbeat. We've got to say upbeat because old can be good. And on that happy note, thank you so much for talking to me.
Absolute pleasure, darling.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Susie Grant, aka Alternative Aging, as much as I did. She's such an inspiration to me and perfect to be part of the Retirement Rebel gang. She's aging in such a vibrant manner. I want to reflect on what we talked about and share with you what I'm taking away from our conversation. We discussed how, as older women, we can do anything that we set our minds to. I'll certainly support that, and it's something that I want this podcast to foster, that sense of self-belief, rather than self-limiting and doubting our abilities. Susie also told me that she only started going to festivals in her 50s, a time when a lot of people think that they're too old to attend them. Now in her 70s, she doesn't see herself stopping anytime soon, and that's inspirational to me, her zest for life. She never thinks I'm too old, and I love that. I'm like that too. Age doesn't define me. As this Retirement Rebel community begins to grow and we support one another, hopefully we'll nurture more like-minded women who want to try new things in their 60s, 70s and beyond like Susie and realise their dreams. Next week, I'm speaking to Annie Stirk. She's an amazing woman in her 70s who's challenging the misconceptions of what later life actually looks like. And despite retiring at 67, she seems even busier nowadays than ever. She's a silver-haired model and her mantra is, just do it, something that I absolutely love. And I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you so much for joining me on today's Retirement Rebel Life After 60. I'm truly grateful for your time and your willingness to embark on this journey with me. If today's conversation sparked something within you, or if you've your own rebel story to share, I'd love to hear from you. Please reach out through our social media channels or email, and let's keep the conversation going. Email us on podcast@retirementrebel.co.uk. And remember, if you found value in our time together today, consider sharing this episode with a friend who might also enjoy and benefit from our Retirement Rebel community. Spreading the word helps us grow and continue to challenge the narrative around life after 60. All of our details can be found on retirementrebel.co.uk. Retirement Rebel Life After 60 is written and hosted by me, Siobhan Daniels, and produced by the incredibly talented Matt Cheney. Join me again next week for another episode. Until then, keep embracing your inner rebel and living life to the fullest. Bye for now.